This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. The mindset around investing responsibly is drawing more and more attention these days as a variety of companies factor in more than just how many items they sell. But what are some of the keys to responsible investing right now? Pleasure to be joined by Jock Payton, who is the founder and CEO of Nubian Square Investment Advisors. Jock, pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for a few moments.
Hey, absolutely. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You got it. So for people that maybe don't follow the term closely enough, the term ethical investing means what, and where does it stand kind of in the landscape of investing right now?
Yeah, thanks. I think ethical investing is more so about removing bias, right? Removing bias and understanding the impacts that investment dollars can have on companies, but not just the companies themselves, but the individuals that work at those companies. And then as those individuals go back into the communities, how it can impact those communities as well. So it's really looking at the totality of how those investment dollars flow into a business, into those individuals, and back into their communities.
So when you talk with individuals about the component of ethical investing, what are the areas that you focus on to try and build out a portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a number of different criteria and factor. Obviously, you do have sustainable investment goals that were put out by the United Nations that range from anywhere from clean water and good jobs to climate justice, but then also economic justice. And that's a lot of where I spend my time trying to think about not only, how people can increase their knowledge of the tools that they need to build wealth and to make a living for their family, but also how that wealth can be used in a way that can, propel investment dollars and investment flows into underserved communities. And when we say underserved communities, a lot of times people just think that is going to equal low returns or charity. But no, there's some really high quality investment opportunities that are out there that just don't get the light of day that they deserve. And that's one thing that I'm hoping to change.
So part of that then, I assume, is trying to bring in more people who maybe don't think about investing as a component of building wealth for their later years in life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's certainly twofold. There's the individual aspect where there's so many people out there that, that still don't understand exactly how powerful investing can be, not just for their current years and, but certainly, yeah, for their years into retirement. And even when you think about passing on generational wealth, what that means to have investments compound from one generation to the next. I think that value of time is something that can be a little bit foreign to some, but when it's related to investments, it's a critical component. And then making sure that you're investing in equity is really the best way to think about growing wealth passively at a greater percentage over time.
How much does the focus also, I guess, look at the component of the wealth gap that's out there right now and trying to close that, over the next handful of years?
Yeah, so, I think it goes back to that concept of equity investing and then also thinking about private investing and early stage investing. So when I think about the wealth gap, the biggest or one of the biggest components is just the lack of investment assets within people's portfolios, and that leads to lower returns over time. But then when you think about the investment assets, there's obviously a range that can be applied there. There are, bank accounts, that yield a very low interest rate. There are, CDs and money market funds and bonds that are going to give you, slightly higher return, but still at a fixed level. And then you start to think about equities. And you obviously have exposure to public equities, and they're going to yield, anywhere between 8 and 12% on an annual basis. But then you also have, this world that people are starting to think about more and talk about more, which is into private investment space, private equity and venture capital, where, you can see some outsized returns, especially if you're investing in good, high-quality businesses for the bright future.
So let me go back and touch on the equity side for a second, because seemingly you have more and more companies that are thinking about, you know, their makeup as a firm. Obviously, they have their core business, but they're thinking about things like sustainability and things that, as you said earlier, really do impact the community at large. Having that as a component really has to help the overall mindset of responsible investing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think any time a firm can think more so about, you know, the future and not just, you know, 3-year guidance, you know, that they're giving investors as far as what their earnings will be. But, you know, when they make those real investments into the business that are going to be impactful, you know, maybe not in the next 1 or 2 or 3 years, but over the course of 5 years, 10 years, and even further down the line, then those are the businesses that you're right there. They're thinking about things the right way. You know, it's contrary to what we may think of as profit maximization as quickly and as early as possible. But it is more so thinking about, well, hey, where's the market going to be down the road? And you always want to work with a management team and a company that is thinking as investors and as long-term investors especially, because those are the ones that typically are going to be able to create a strategic plan that, you know, has time to pan out and then has time to create real and large impact.
So then what has been your read on the equity markets over the last few years, and where do you think we're headed over the next handful of years as well?
Yeah, it's been an interesting take so far over the last few years, especially when you think about the rise and kind of fall of I'm not going to say the fall, but the price decline certainly of some of the names in the ESG space, especially around electronic vehicles. And, you know, that's, I would say, mostly due to the pretty increased or rapid increase in the interest rates that we saw. You know, obviously, when you have these long-term growth companies, you do have a lot of their value that's trapped in that terminal value part of the equation. And when that terminal value has a higher cost of capital because of higher interest rates, then that impacts their overall valuation tremendously. So it is painful to see some of those companies that had those longer-term kind of growth plans in place come down here quite a bit within the past few years. But once again, that's not to say that they won't be some of the most meaningful companies down the line. So I think that this is a great opportunity to start thinking more so about the future and start looking at some of those companies that have been really beat up. And then obviously you've had just the larger cap names that have outperformed tremendously, especially you know, the seven that people refer to quite often, and really NVIDIA, yeah. And the semiconductors leading the charge and with tremendous growth because of the need for AI semiconductor chips. So, you know, you have this kind of bifurcation between, hey, what's here right now, and that's what investors seem to be focused on. And you know, I think that trend is a difficult one to say will last. You know, typically when you see such rapid growth in a short period of time, you know, that growth isn't sustainable at that rate over an extended period. So where we go from here, I think we're going to start to see some normalization. You know, I know there has been some calls for the businesses that are producing cash flow kind of back to the value trade. You know, it's tough to say if that will happen because the market has just been so focused on momentum. And I do think if we start to see lower interest rates, that obviously that momentum trade and that growth trade will continue.
How do you think about the energy sector in the scope of sustainable and responsible investing as well? Because that's also an area where, you know, there's believed to be a path down one road. When you think about, you know, the investments that we see being made in a variety of different renewable energy options. But then you have the dynamic of fossil fuels, which a lot of people believe will ease in years ahead, but there is still a component of it that is going to be relied upon, it seems like, by the world at large, not only just the next couple of decades, but probably the next several decades.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's you know, I hate to say it, but fossil fuels, they're here to stay for a very long time. After I graduated from Wharton, I was an energy analyst, and I was covering a lot of the major oil companies. And, you know, you're surprised by just how much oil impacts our day-to-day lives. The amount of material that is made from petrochemicals, obviously petrochemicals being derived as a byproduct of oil, and how that just impacts everything that we do. So it's not just about the cars and the amount of energy that we use through the electric grid and increasing renewable energy through solar and wind sources. But it's also the materials that we're using, the plastics and that are really impacting our world in a major way, not just because of the pollution and the byproducts that end up in the ocean, but, how we just carry on our day-to-day lives. So it's difficult to say that oil and petrochemicals will be phased out in the near term. I do think that it is going to be a transition. So we have to, think about how that transition is going to take place and almost providing enough capital for it to be a smooth transition, because otherwise, if oil companies don't have the capital they need and oil prices go through the roof, and that's going to impact inflation across the board. So we do have to be careful about, what that transition looks like, but not taking our eyes off of what the long term will bring.
Let me finish up on the private equity side, which you mentioned, which I guess had seen a pullback over the last couple of years, maybe a little bit more a level of caution with throwing out the money that may be in the private equity space. Are we starting to get back to maybe a norm, or are we still kind of in a little bit of a holding pattern here until we understand what the Fed may or may not be doing over the next several months?
Yeah, I think, for the mega funds, for the well-known entities that have been out there and have done well and have a really strong track record over a number of years and over a number of fund vintages, they're still able to go out and raise capital. But you are seeing fundraising still down pretty substantially across most of the first-time managers or some of the newer funds that are out there. And I think that, that thesis may stay true for just a bit. And it is going to be difficult to see exactly, where that competitive edge comes in for the newer funds, since there are the tried-and-true kind of mega players in the space at this point. Obviously, small businesses and growing kind of mature businesses still need access to capital. So I think that's just going to create a number of opportunities for those that can be a little bit more creative about how they go about financing some of these businesses, whether it is through a fund or it is through an independent sponsor. And I'm also even seeing a number of, even classmates that have gone through the entrepreneurship through acquisition space. So, there's, I think, more unique ways to think about financing some of these businesses that are, in the private markets that may be outside of the traditional mega funds, because they're likely going to fall below their radar.
Jock, great to meet you. Thanks very much for your time today. All the best.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Jock Payton, founder and CEO at Nubian Square Investment Advisors. To explore more content from the Wharton School, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.